What helps you live longer? Goji berries, cold showers, only eating between 5 and 9 on a Thursday. Dr. Norman Swan will sort out the wheat from the chaff and the chia seeds up next on Life Matters. What counts as a good innings when it comes to human life? 70, 90, beyond? You might have some keen opinions on that, but it will probably depend where, when and how you've lived. Love to hear your thoughts on this as we chat to Dr. Norman Swan today. Norman grew up with chips as a dietary staple, but now he advocates for the Mediterranean diet, among other things, as keys to a long and healthy life. He's a multi-award-winning broadcaster, investigative journalist and the co-host of RN's Health Report and CoronaCast. Dr. Norman Swan, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Hilary.
Now, the new book's called So You Want to Live Longer, the most rhetorical of questions.
Well, live younger longer.
You live younger longer, sorry. And you dedicate a large part of it to things that we can change, lifestyle factors. How much do genes matter, though?
Well, a really good question. A lot of people still believe that to live a long and healthy life, you've got to have parents and grandparents who live long and healthy lives. Well, you wouldn't say no to that. But in fact, it matters less and less as time goes on. 40, 50 years ago and before, to live to 100 was a genetic abnormality. A nice genetic abnormality, but a genetic abnormality nonetheless. You had to have the genes to live to 100. It turns out that genes really matter at the extremes of old age. So the extreme of old age 50 years ago was probably around about 90. The extreme of old age now is 105 and 110. So if your ambition is to get 105 or 110, at the moment genes matter. Maybe 25 years' time, that'll be 110 or 115. So we're getting, my point is, we're getting to our 90s and even our 100s in reasonable shape, largely because of a whole series of factors that have not got very much to do with our genes.
Norman, there's a wonderful passage in the book where you explore your family's attitude to death and some of the ripple effects that had for you later in your life and your medical training. Tell us what happened when you were 8 and how that played out.
Yeah, when I had both my parents were single, only children, and well, not only children, my father was. My mother had a brother who got leukemia in his 20s and when I was very young and died when he was 28. But nobody told me he'd died. Well, I knew he was sick and we used to go and visit him in hospital, but nobody told me he'd died. And, you know, my grandmother and my mother were crying in the lounge and I just assumed that it was because my uncle was sick. And then I discovered, my mother told me maybe 2 weeks later that he died. And I was told never to mention his name again, not to acknowledge that he died because it would upset my grandparents and upset her. And his name was never mentioned again. And it created a mystery and a horror for me around death, which I hold to this day. I do not approach death with equanimity.
Well, and that's going to play out well for us because this book is full of really great tips on how to put
right.
that
my
off.
Fear of, my fear, it was a very extended period of personal psychotherapy, that's right.
Yeah, that's important. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you go through in the book that are factors we can change. Dietary restriction, how useful is that for humans? And let's clarify, are we talking about intermittent fasting or just reducing our total calories?
The basic principle here is what they call dietary or calorie restriction, which means, and we'll come back to intermittent fasting because everybody's got a question about the 5-2 diet and time-restricted eating. You casually mentioned eating only on a Thursday at 5 till 9. But so the idea here is that there's a calorie gap between the calories you burn and the calories you take in. And that's what works. So and it works in every animal species, and there are signs that it works in humans as well. There's a lot of problems in the whole area of staying younger longer about how. And by the way, we haven't defined what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is that you've got fewer miles on the clock than your years on Earth might suggest. So that you're it's like buying the car that's 10 years old, but it's only been driven to the shops a couple of times a week. So it's still a young car, it's quite old. But you don't get to, as a human, you don't get to old age by driving to the shops twice a week. So calorie restriction is simply that, there's a calorie gap. Now, the problem with the 5-2 diet, now, Professor Luigi Fontana at Sydney University, on whose research Michael Mosley based a lot of his early stuff, there's an incomplete story, not necessarily, I'm not blaming Michael Mosley here, but there's an incomplete story, an understanding that people have of the 5-2 diet of intermittent fasting. It's that you get the sense that you can do anything you like on the 5 days where you eat what you like. You can't eat what you like. You've actually got to have a high quality diet, because the potential here is that you go into malnutrition, that you get malnourished. There's certain things that you don't eat. So you've got to have a high quality diet. And we'll come back to what that means in a minute. The other problem with the 5-2 diet is that your body adjusts to the lower calories. So you burn fewer calories at rest, your basal metabolic rate. So in order to sustain the calorie gap, you've actually got to exercise to a reasonably intense extent. So that's the story there. But, you know, that's, if you like, a bit at the extreme. What we know works, let's go to the diet part of here. I do go through, by the way, in the book, we might get to this, you know, supplements, things that you can intervene and so on. And it's not all rubbish, by the way. But the high quality diet, It's a Mediterranean style diet, and I think you and I have spoken about this before. Mm. It's as much about how you cook as what's in the pot.
That was a bit surprising for me, actually, that it was, I mean, fresh veggies are good, but the cooking process and the oil you use is important.
Correct. A raw tomato is, you know, if that's what you're going to eat rather than processed food, fantastic. Eat a chopped tomato, that's better for you because it releases certain antioxidants. Pour extra virgin olive oil and roast that tomato or a red capsicum, that's even better for you still. But if you put extra virgin olive oil in a pot, chop up your onions, crushed garlic, tomatoes, and say carrots in there, that's a Frito mix, that cooks up a pot of anti-aging compounds, bioactive compounds that you cannot dream of buying in a shop. And then when you consume that in whatever else you add to that, as part of your dish, when you consume that, those bioactive compounds are absorbed. They actually settle down your immune system, stop the immune system fibrosing and aging your tissues, slow down oxidative stress. But they also change your microbiome to a much more pro-youthful state, where again, it's settling down your immune system, it's feeding back to the brain, reducing brain aging. And so what you eat and how you cook. But then it's not just that. One of the researcher in Melbourne called Tanya Thodis, who has researched Greek Australians and reckons that Greek Australians, and they're best studied in Melbourne, are the second longest lived people in the world. Mm-hmm. And when you look at, and it illustrates the holistic nature of living younger, longer. Yeah, everybody said, well, Greek Australians live long. Well, people say, duh, it's the Mediterranean diet. Well, it's the Greek diet. The Greek diet's the classic Mediterranean diet. So, yes, they do eat the Mediterranean diet. Not a lot of red meat, but it's more than that. They cook on a moderate heat. If you go to Coburg, you know, there's wood-fired ovens in, you know, half the garages of Coburg. The slow cooking when they do eat meat. They don't burn food, because burning food, say on a barbecue, create those pro-aging compounds. They often, if they don't have a backyard, they'll often have an allotment, particularly in Melbourne, other cities not so much so. So their herbs and vegetables are fresh. So whatever substances are in herbs that are going to do you good, they're more likely to be there when they're fresh. This has not got very much to do with organic. It's more to do with freshness. Vietnamese Australians are the same. If you translate to Sydney and you go out to Cabramatta, just watch Vietnamese Australians shopping for green vegetables. God help you if you're a greengrocer in Cabramatta. You're very particular about what they buy, that it's fresh. And then, as I say, they're cooking in the cuisine. They eat with friends and family. So they maintain social, incredibly important. That sounds soft, but what I talk about in the book is the fact that our brain runs everything in our body, and our brain takes in stuff from the environment. So, and it translates it to physical messages in our body. And if you are lonely and isolated and you're not got social contact or you're chronically stressed, that changes your body into a pro-aging state rather than an anti-aging state. And there's plenty of research, which I reference in the book. And then the other thing that older Greek Australians do is that they're still quite religious. And the Greek Orthodox Church has about 100 fast days a year, but they're not Michael Mosley fasts. They're plant-based days where you don't eat other protein. So they're like vegan fasts. So it's better called, rather than intermittent fasting, they've got intermittent frugality.
Mm, yeah, that's something I can get behind. The whole, you know, intermittent fasting thing made me angry and it was largely unsustainable, I found. You're listening, if you didn't already know, to Dr. Norman Swan, co-host of RN's Health Report and CoronaCast and author of the new book, So You Want to Live Younger, Longer. And I mean, Norman, the lifestyle you've just described, the social connection, the sharing of food, the cooking of fresh foods on a low heat and a range of vegetables, that is quite a long way from the kind of processed miracle foods that often a Western diet has tried to include as a way to live longer, you know, the goji berries or the apple cider vinegar. Why do we do that? Why do we go, this will fix it?
Well, like you just implied, you know, some of these things are hard to stick to when somebody gives you a formula where you've got to fast every couple of days or you're not allowed to have your breakfast and you only eat between 12 and 8. It's much easier if you could take a pill. Now, most of the anti-aging, so goji berries are not that bad for you. They're red, they've got rich in antioxidants, but it's not the only thing. It would be part of a general diet. And I do have a go at goji berries as a proxy for a simple solution. I mean, one of the things, I quote it at the beginning of the book, H.L. Mencken, the American humorist of 100 years ago, and I'm grossly paraphrasing what he said, but he said, you know, roughly what he said was, for every complicated problem, there's a clear and simple solution, which is always wrong. And nowhere is that truer than in aging. So you've got all these anti-aging compounds on the shelf to save us time and effort, because they're all trying to mimic. So they're not complete rubbish. I mean, they're all trying to mimic calorie restriction. That's what these anti-aging compounds are supposed to do. The trouble is, and in animals, they do it. You know, NAD boosters do work in animals. They will extend the animal's life by 30%, but they don't work in humans. Resveratrol works in animals, but it doesn't seem to work in humans. There are other things which do seem to work in humans. Why is that? And what I describe here is, what I spend a lot of time in the book talking about, is the balance in our bodies. And imagine the Tower of Pisa when it's just freshly built, straight up and down the line. And that's what the balance in our bodies. When our blood pressure goes up, there's something to pull it down. When our hormones go up, there's something to pull them back, et cetera, et cetera. For everything that happens, there's a counteracting force. Now, what happens with the battering of life? And that includes things like chronic stress, smoking, blood pressure, other things, just life in general, is that the Tower of Pisa starts to lean, and it leans towards aging. And it's really hard to bring it back to the vertical. And what happens is that every time you poke it with something simple or too simple, the body goes back to this balance situation and pokes it back. And what we've yet to find out is the way to bring it back to balance. So some people are saying what you need is a combination of these compounds at very low doses, maybe only once every 2 weeks, just to confuse the body and nudge it back. And dietary restriction does that more comprehensively, but there may well be other ways. There's also other fascinating things, like, you know, the people are trying to flog stem cell therapy, jump on the plane to Germany and go and get stem cell therapy because what you need are young stem cells. What happens when you put stem cells into the young stem cells into an older body is the stem cells age.
Huh.
There are people flogging, you know, getting young person's blood into older people to rejuvenate them. So here's the fascinating research I describe in the book, is that they've attached older mice to younger mice in the hope that the younger mice, the hypothesis, the younger mice are going to rejuvenate the older mice. You know what happens? The younger mouse gets older.
Wow, this is starting to sound more and more like a William Gibson novel, I have to say, Dr. Norman Swan. But I do, before we have to finish up, I want to ask you, it's really interesting to me that you included some big picture stuff at the end of your book. You dedicate the final chapter to climate change and other apocalyptic scenarios. How important is addressing the collective threats to our well-being and inequity, as well as these individual lifestyle changes, to ensuring that we all live longer?
Absolutely critical. We are already living younger longer. At 80, if you're 80 today, your chances of dying in the next 12 months are the same as they were if you were 60, 50 years ago. Now, that's come as a result of government policy. We're not smoking as much. We're getting education. Education, longer you stay in education, the longer you live, the later you get dementia, if you get dementia at all, and so on. These are critical factors. And social factors really do make a difference. And if we actually change our environment, and our environment becomes, I mean, this is existential. What's the point of talking about goji berries if we're going to die of heat exhaustion, or the food, we're not going to have enough food on the table because our farming lands are drought ridden?
There you go. Holistic Health on the ABC. Dr. Norman Swan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Hillary.
There is so much more in the book than we even got to dip a toe in today. It's called So You Want to Live Younger Longer? Yes, I do. Dr. Norman Swan, award-winning broadcaster, investigative journalist, co-host of RN's Health Report and CoronaCast.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.